Good morning, church. Man, so thankful for this Sunday to be together, to worship together. Thankful for Rich and leading us this morning in our singing, and for the great job everyone's done, Joel and Anthony, and directing our minds in worship. It is good to be together with the family of God on every occasion, but especially appreciate Sunday mornings in our time we get to worship. I know we got a lot of people traveling, and my wife is out sick. My daughter's traveling. I'm just going to assume that's what everybody's doing. It's just been one of those kind of weeks. We just, a lot going on, but that's good that we get to come here and sort of reset, reboot, and restore. Now, I was talking with someone this last week about what it's like to be a bus driver, and of course I saw that it's real glamorous, and about how great it is. But one of the things that I'm reminded of as I'm doing this, because you know, as my kids are grown and I don't see little kids as much anymore interacting with one another, it's just seeing how the pressure they kind of place on one another. Even like kindergartners, first graders, and how many of you are familiar with the term peer pressure? Just raise your hand. You see how everybody else is doing it? It makes you feel bad for not raising your hand, doesn't it? Now, I feel like that's probably a term that's been thrown around a lot, and you're probably familiar with it. You've heard it. You probably heard sermons on it. Some, maybe even good sermons. I don't know, but I know I remember as a teenager that was like, if you were going to talk to teenagers, that's what you had to talk about, was peer pressure. And like we saw lots of pictures with one kid forcing a beer at another one, and or a cigarette or something like that. And that was what I always had in my mind as peer pressure. But it's not just bad stuff. I mean, peer pressure is not just about getting your friends or being talked into doing something that's, you know, immoral or illegal or anything like that. And way back in 1960, there was a psychologist. Her name was Ruth Berinda. And she and her associates carried out this really interesting study, this experiment with adolescents, like younger teens, on how that people in that group handled peer pressure. And so the plan was simple. They brought them in to a room for a test. And each group, they were told, these 10 kids were told, we want you to raise your hand when we point to the longest line. And so it might look something like this, right? So what one person in the group didn't know was that before they ever got to this point, 9 of them were instructed, raise your hand for the second longest line. And so they wanted to gauge the response of one person. The whole thing was set up for one person at a time. So she would bring them in, she'd bring up a slide like this, and she'd point to this first line. Now, if you are visually impaired, I apologize. This is the second longest line, right? And then 9 kids' hands would go up. And that 10th kid, what they generally would do is they would look around, and they would frown a little bit and look confused, and then they would slowly raise their hand. And then they would do another slide and another slide, until pretty soon, this kid is just following suit, right? And this experiment began with these 9 pointing out to the wrong line. One person would be confused, but generally, 75% of the time, this person would just go right along. And it wasn't just like younger teens. They did it with little kids, and it worked out to be true for little kids and older teens. And I haven't seen just studies about peer pressure in adults. It generally gets lesser as you get older, but it still exists, right? Time after time, as self-conscious people, we lack the courage to challenge the group. Now, that's true of little kids. It's true of teenagers. It's true of young adults, even old adults, right? 75% of the time for this group, but a good percentage of the time for most of us, we lack the courage to challenge the groupthink. Most of us sitting here this morning are probably thinking, well, that's just crazy. I wouldn't do that. You know, I'd stick to my guns. I'd be pointing to that longest line. And maybe you're right. Maybe you would be doing that. But we are all human. And as human beings, we know that most of the time, we want to fit in. We want to be like the people who are around us. We want acceptance. We want to be a part of the group, whatever the group might be. And God knows this about us, right? He knows our human nature. He knows that as mortals, we look to the people who are around us to see how they're doing things. And we tend to think, well, if that's the way all these other people are doing it, you know, I'll do it that way. And that's our go-to. And maybe you've been in a situation before where you were like confused. What am I supposed to do here? And you kind of look around, you gauge, and you see, well, everybody else is doing their finances this way, or dressing that way, or handling their yard this way. You look at the other yards in your neighborhood. Is my yard going to fit in with the yards in my neighborhood? If I go to church and I dress this way, am I going to stick out, or am I going to look more like the people who are at the church, right? We look to everybody else to see how we ought to behave. Totally normal, totally rational. And so as we're continuing our study through the book of Deuteronomy, God knows this about us, and he makes what we'll call a preemptive strike. He tells Israel, as they're sitting there, standing there on the verge of going into the promised land, they haven't even set foot in the promised land yet. And he's like, look, you're going to go in there, and you have to be really careful with that tendency to want to be like everybody else. Yeah, be really careful. This is what he says at the beginning of chapter 12. He says, these are the laws, decrees and laws that you must be careful to follow in the land that the Lord, the God of your ancestors, has given you to possess as long as you live in the land. He said, destroy completely all the places on the high mountains, on the hills, and under every spreading tree where the nations you are dispossessing worship their gods. In other words, you're going to go in, you're going to see all these places of worship. There's going to be some will be up on hills, some are going to be under trees. You're going to see all these places where they worship their God. Knock them all down. And this is the verbiage he uses in the next verse. I mean, really strong words. He says, break down their altars, smash their sacred stones, burn their Asherah poles in the fire, cut down the idols of their gods, and wipe out their names from those places. You must not worship the Lord your God in their way. Now, it's kind of strange if you just stop and think about it logically, and we're certainly all logical people, right? Here's God. In his relationship with Israel, he has delivered them from slavery from the strongest nation in the world, in that part of the world at the time. He's delivered a weaker people from the strongest nation, military power, at that time. He has protected and provided for them through years of wandering in a barren wilderness. And if you ever get a chance, I would encourage you to look up the Sinai wilderness and think, how would you support yourself by yourself going across that thing? I mean, it does look like there's enough water to drink or food to eat. And God supports tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, some have speculated even over a million people, in crossing that desert for years. And here is God who's taken this number of people whose number of fighting men was not equivalent to anybody else. They weren't equipped as well as anybody else. They didn't have fortified cities like anybody else. And he has led them to victory in battle time and again. God has done all this for this smaller group of poor, weaker people. And yet he's having to remind them to stay loyal to him because he knows their nature. He knows that as human beings, this is true. This is that you're not going to like this statement. I'm just telling you up front. You're not going to like it, but this is true of us. We would rather be accepted than be right. And this is coming from a guy who really likes being right. Generally speaking, we would rather be accepted by those around us than be correct. Now, in an ideal world, we get to be both. And sometimes that turns out to be the case. But generally speaking, we prefer being a part of the group, being accepted, having people who look to us as well. We would rather have that. Or the way Ruth Miranda put it was that they would rather be president than be correct. Right? We want people to vote for us. And God knows this about us. And he knows. He's like, look, Israel, you're going to go into that land. You're going to see all these places of worship. And this is what you're going to do. You're going to see them. And they're really cool places. And they're really decorated. And they look really fancy. They look really holy. And you're going to go, I wonder. And he's like, no, don't do that. Don't do that. And remember, their thinking at this time was a God for every land, right? You've got this God who rules this land, and you go into another land, there's another God who's in charge over there. And so you're going to go into this land, you're going to think, oh, these are the gods of this land. I wonder if maybe we should also include those guys. You're going to think that these Asherah poles and these idols to Baal, and you're going to look at those and you're going to think, maybe these are the gods of this land. Maybe they're really strong and mighty. Maybe we ought to add them to the to-do list. And he's like, don't do that. So later in the chapter, he says this to them. He says, the Lord your God will cut off before you the nations you are about to invade and dispossess. In other words, I'm going to go in, I'm going to take care of these people. You're going to fight, but I'm going to take care of them. But when you have driven them out and settle in their land, and after they've been destroyed before you, be careful not to be ensnared by inquiries about their gods, saying, well, how did these nations serve their gods? And we'll just do the same. You must not worship the Lord your God in their way, because in worshiping their gods, they do all kinds of detestable things the Lord hates. And he goes on to talk about how they even sacrificed their own children in the fire. I mean, terrible things. That's what these gods are about. Now, it's completely normal for you and I to want to build friendships and strengthen bonds with others. And it is completely understandable that we fear being ostracized, right? That's some of that genetic code that we have, is that we don't want to be singled out and set over there. And so when we have these thoughts, our go-to response is to conform and imitate their behaviors. But we're real smart. You and I, we're real smart. We're smarter than that. We're not like, no, I'm just going to believe what they believe in and everything. No, what we do is we tell ourselves, I'll change my outward behavior, but on the inside, I'm going to keep my same beliefs. You know how we did that? You ever done that? You know, when this group of people are doing something, you're like, well, I don't really think that's true or I think that's right, but I'll do it to fit in. But inside, under my mind, in my heart, I'm not going to really believe that or think that. I'm going to change my outward behavior, but I'm going to keep my inward beliefs. And we think that's good enough. And God says that is not good enough. God knows that Israel's going to go in there and think, we want to behave like everyone else. But the great irony is that God's very mission for Israel, their reason to be, their raison d'etre, if you love French, their reason for existing is to stand out and be different. Like the reason I created you, the reason I brought you, made a promise to Abraham, the reason I brought you out of slavery, the reason you have flourished and had so many people, the reason you have survived the wilderness and passed through the Red Sea and defeated these enemies, the whole reason I have done that for you is that so you will be distinct and different and separated by something different about you from everyone else around you. And your uniqueness, it's not going to come from your size. You're not going to have more people or more land or anything. You're not going to be wealthier. That's not what's going to make you different. It's not even your righteousness, which is sometimes what we think. We think of just being, you know, act gooder than everybody else. And he's like, it's not even your righteousness that's going to set you apart. It is going to be your loyalty to me and me alone, is what God says. Loyalty to God above everyone and everything else. Loyalty to God above your family relationships, above your friendships. Loyalty to God above success and prosperity. Loyalty to God and God alone. And when we are being loyal to God, by definition, we're going to be different than the world around us. We're going to look different. We're going to act different. We're going to think differently. And contrary to what that some will tell you, even some Christians will tell you this, that God wants you to be like the world around us, God actually wants us to be really different. He wants us to stand out. For Israel, and we're not going to just, I know some of you are going to be disappointed, but we're not going to go through all the laws in Deuteronomy. Do you have questions about specific laws? You write them down and give them to the elders. You know, David's got chapters 11 through, oh, okay. Anyway, there are a bunch of specific laws, and you go through those laws, and you're like, those are just weird, right? Those are really strange laws. Like, why can they eat some foods but not eat other foods? Why can they eat, you know, sheep but not pig? And in Tennessee, we really wanted that. We'd had barbecue. And we're like, why would anybody give up pig or bacon, right? I mean, or why can they eat fish but not shellfish? That doesn't make any difference to us. I mean, if I go in and I get a grilled salmon or a side of grilled shrimp, right, that just all seems to go together. Why can they eat some but not other things? And so that is part of their being different. They're not eating the same foods that are staples of their neighbor's diets. And so every time they prepared a meal or sat down to eat, they were reminded of their distinctness. Even the way we eat is not like everybody else. They were different in the way that they dressed, right? They had different ways of dressing. He's like, you don't wear... don't wear garments that are made out of two different kinds of cloth. Some people are going to do that. You're just going to wear cloth that's made from one type of fiber, right? Just linen. Don't mix linen and wool or anything like that. And men and women, you're just going to dress like men, and women, you're just going to dress like women. And some cultures, they don't do that. I know that, but you're just going to dress that way. And you're going to have tassels on the corners of your clothing, four tassels. Now, all of this is just to remind you that you are not like them. You are separate. You are different. You are distinct. And he goes on, and there's other weird-looking laws to us. It's like when you're planting a vineyard, don't use two different kinds of seed. We're like, why does that matter? Or and he says, or when you're, you know, when you've got a field that you need to plow and you've got a yoke, you've got to have two animals. I've got one ox and one donkey. He's like, don't hook those things up together. Either use two oxen or two donkeys or whatever you got, but don't use two different animals. You're like, why does that matter? Right? But to God it does matter. Because it's all about setting them apart. Every time they had to find ways to work with God's laws, they were reminded of his call to distinction, his uniqueness. And so all of these laws, all of these practices would make them stand out from the world around them, from the culture around them. But in a really weird way, maybe you've experienced this as well, it also created a unique culture in Israel itself. In other words, we're going to be different from everyone else, but we are going to be different together. Right? So Israel is saying, you know, that we're not like the rest of the world, but at least we're all being different together. And so within the community of Israel, right, they would all be coming together at the same time, in the same place, to worship the same God. This one God. And that was not like everybody else where you had all these different places of worship and all these different gods. And so Israel was going to be really distinct in that. And he's like, you know, and you're going to share in one table that looks different than everybody else's with different foods on it. And you're all going to be supporting the same vulnerable people, people like the Levites who don't have any land, and the widows, and the orphans, and the foreigners who are not even from Israel, but they're living in your land. You're all going to come together and support them together. And you're all going to teach your kids these same values together. And yes, you're all going to be weird together. The purposes of these laws were not, and some, maybe your parents told you this before, that they wanted to, you know, like, cut you off, seal you off from the rest of the world. The purposes of God's laws were not to protect them or seal them off or cut them off from the rest of the world. In fact, the exact opposite is true. He wants them to be right there in the middle of the world, seen by the world, but as an alternative to the way they were living. most importantly, what does it look like to worship the one true and living God, Yahweh, as opposed to all these other gods? He doesn't want them to isolate themselves. He wants them to integrate themselves in a different way. Brothers and sisters, you and I, we have been called to be different, called to be distinct, called to be set apart from the world around us, not so that we can isolate ourselves or cut ourselves off from our coworkers and our neighbors and our friends, and not so we can look down our nose at them or point out what they're doing wrong. That was not ever their job, was God's people to tell the not God's people why they're not God's people. That was not the role of these laws. You know, it wasn't the Jews' job to tell the Gentiles why they shouldn't eat shrimp. It wasn't the Jews' jobs to get on to the Assyrians about mixing their cloth or yoking unequal animals. It wasn't their job to make everybody else follow these laws. It was their job to follow them and look different. I don't want everybody else to look like me. We want to be different than everybody else. And I think sometimes Christians, in our ambition to be godly, to be holy, we want the whole world to look like us. And that's not the point. The point is that we'll be different than everyone else. It's not my job to make sure that the heathen people down the street don't be heathen. That's what the world does. It's my job to live distinctive as an alternative to that. And so God wants us to live as his children in his way in the midst of everyone else, so that they'll see that difference and be drawn to it. And as difficult as that task is, and if you've been a teenager, and some of you have, if you've been a teenager, you may remember that peer pressure, but as adults, I'm going to say it doesn't get a whole lot better. If you're a teenager this morning, it doesn't ever go away. It may get a little easier, you know, once you get old enough to not care, but I haven't hit that age yet. You're always going to be looking to people who are around your age or around your income or around your, you know, your value system or something like that, and you're going to be comparing yourself to them all the time. And so it's hard to be different even as a grown person. The good thing is God has given us this invaluable resource, because we are called to be different together. We together are called to be the city on the hill. We together are called to raise our kids with different values. We together are called to live as God's holy people, set apart for his purposes, unique in a culture that's given to the world. And if you are struggling with that and find yourself swimming in waters over your head, if you need forgiveness, if you need strength, if you need direction, you are perfectly human, perfectly loved, and perfectly accepted. And we want you to know that we are here for you. We can pray for you with you this morning and lift you up and walk with you. If you are ready to become a child of a unique God, to accept unique and lasting life and live as his child forever, we want to help you now. I want you to come to stand as we sing.